Welcome to the Clam Jammers Podcast, the semi-erotic podcast exploring the strange world of smut and kitsch in all its forms. Welcome to the world of Shore, Miri, and put upon Penguin Crabsworth as they play, chat, and laugh their way through all of life's intimate topics. Come for the sex, stay for the weird.
Good afternoon. Welcome to a very special episode of Star Wars Legacy of the Force. As you know, we have been very, very passionate about Star Wars for a very, very long period of time. As has the world, Star Wars has spawned many different tie-in novels, movies. There's a Star Wars Monopoly. There's a Star Wars Monopoly. But one of the things that we have yet to talk about are its parodies. Now you could be asking, how is Death Pixie going to control or cover the parodies? Well, my friends, this is where we hit a creative impasse. Everyone knows the Family Guy Blue Harvest trilogy. But when I brought that up, Miri creamed in her jeans so hard about the idea of covering Seth MacFarlane that it became a moot point. Obviously, anything Seth MacFarlane does is gold, and Miri will gladly vouch for that at any given opportunity. We thought about the Pinky and the Brain series finale, where they just decided, fuck it, let's do Star Wars. Which I don't know if Miri's actually heard about until today, just based off of the way her face is. But then we thought to ourselves, Spaceballs. I like Spaceballs. You like Spaceballs. Everybody likes Spaceballs. Let's go through it with our lenses now the way we are, even if we haven't seen it in years. And then we were like, let's do it. So this is Spaceballs.
Woohoo! Oh, welcome, man, to the Spaceballs.
Here's your dance, do your dance at the Spaceballs. Okay, so I've got a Funko Pop with Michael Jordan, and it's giving me a death stare right now.
Imagine the Space Jam, original Space Jam, Spaceballs crossover.
Oh my god.
It would be utter chaos, but brilliant.
Oh my god, it would be, and... yeah.
Also,
it'd still be better than Space Jam 2, which, by the way.
I do want to say the late 90s were a very interesting time. There was this blip of films that should never have worked as films, but they did.
Yeah.
And no one can say why, but they did. On that note, we are talking about
a late 80s film that shouldn't have worked, but did.
Yeah. So I do want to do a bit of context before we dive in.
Yeah,
so
go ahead.
So Spaceballs is a parody of Star Wars, but more the spirit of Star Wars, and Star Wars as the, I don't know, the Goliath that it is.
Yeah.
It's by Mel Brooks, who is legendary.
Yes.
Legendary, like, comedian director Mel Brooks. I will say that this is it is a parody film. It is considered a American space opera parody film is what it's considered, which made me smile.
And it had the Aliens reference and the Star Trek reference.
There's so many references in here, and I do say that now that, like, I know this was originally released in the summer of 1987.
Yeah.
And it really did, now looking back, how many years later? 40 years later?
36.
36 years later. Oh, yeah, which reminds me, this movie is 1 year older than me.
Woo!
Oh. I will say, looking back, you can definitely see its greater impact on comedy and on parody. But the reason why I want to add the contextual piece about when it was made, the market wasn't saturated with parodies. This was before the, what is it? Those scary movie parodies Scary Movie.
They're called Scary Movie.
They're called Scary Movie. This was before Scary Movie was a thing. This was before everybody did a parody. It really did kick off these kind of parody movies. Didn't create the genre, but definitely just solidified what that looks like and kind of set the stage for that. Yeah. That being said, it is considered parody, but it's also by Mel Brooks, who is considered farce. And he also has, he was born in 1949. So he has kind of an older vaudevillian style to him, I find.
Yes, he does.
So some of it may not necessarily work today. And I don't, we both.
I think a lot of it doesn't work today.
But that being said, that doesn't mean you can't have fond memories of it. That doesn't mean that you can't enjoy it. It's just understand when it was made. It's also fun if you want to understand kind of who the big stars were at the time, because two of them very prominently are in this movie, which is pretty cool, actually.
Yeah,
that they both came into it. I also want to note that when, I think it was when movie one, episode one came out, there were all these Vanity Fair specials and, well, all these magazine specials, but Vanity Fair in particular asked the crew of Star Wars, cast and crew and anybody else involved, to list and rank the best Star Wars parody. And this is the one that they rank the highest by far. So that does say something to it setting the stage. Now, that being said, let's have some fun, because I do enjoy the opening gag. It is a simple opening gag, but I love that opening gag.
Oh, yeah. It's like there are a bunch of things, like, I'm going to party poop on this movie, but because I was worried about it going into it. I remember loving Dark Helmet. Spoiler alert, I still do. But not much else. As I age and watch this thing, if you can read this, you don't need glasses line in the opening scroll got me hard. Similarly, the 1 minute long establishing shot with the "we break for nobody."
Yeah.
The 1 minute long opening shot of the Star Destroyer shouldn't have worked. It shouldn't have worked.
But it's so good.
But it's oh God.
It's oh God. It's one of those things where it stops being funny, then becomes funny again. It is such a prime example of that.
And the best part was you used it to set up another joke.
Yep.
80 minutes into the movie. It's a one-liner, but it's beautiful because it just makes it hit so much harder. Dark Helmet's wardrobe is fantastic because it goes right into the space balls. Dark Helmet's wardrobe is fantastic because, of course, he has to have a tie.
Yeah.
He goes on the radar. I don't know. Do you want to summarize this story? Because I can't. I really can't.
So I think the reason why it says space opera is there is some throwback to those very old style space opera movies and those sci-fi books where you have a space princess and she's gonna get married, but oh no, that can't happen for this reason, which isn't confined to sci-fi. Like, it is across all genres, that trope. Yep. Just don't. Anyway, she's there. She has to marry a prince. She doesn't want to marry the prince. She escapes with her robot, which is a combo of C-3PO and R2-D2, voiced by Joan Rivers.
It's literally Joan Rivers' robot.
Yeah, and here's the thing. I love Joan Rivers. I think there is a place for insult comedy. It's just like how I love the tradition of reading by drag queens. Yep. I think you to have those safe spaces to get that out in a fun, lighthearted way is important. So you just know, if you're going to argue against Joan Rivers, I'm not going to listen because I enjoy her thoroughly.
Oh, so don't touch Joan Rivers.
Oh no, I meant if you're gonna argue against Joan Rivers as a person, like you're
no.
Yeah, there. No. Anyway, she escapes, and that's when we get introduced to this rogue character who, you know, starts off as Han but turns out to be a combo between Han and Luke. Don't worry, they're not related. Anyway, Eddie.
I'm glad you threw that disclaimer in.
Don't worry, they're not related. So they run into him and his Wookiee character, which is basically Barf, played by John Candy. I'm sorry, there were three major stars of the time and a few up-and-comer stars of the time.
And two of them actually got to shine in this movie.
Yeah.
Barf wasn't one of them.
But so you have John Candy in that role, which I'm trying to remember. I think this was before Cool Runnings.
I don't know.
I think it was before Cool Running. So this is, you know, big deal. And they are on the run from Pizza the Hutt, who yep. is their Jabba the Hutt.
Which, by the way, is a great costume.
It's it is so disgusting, a good way.
I don't know if it's a costume or a puppet, but it's...
The design.
It is gorgeous.
Yeah, the design, it's so disgusting and so great. They bump into them. Hijinks ensue. They're also on the... Obviously, we also see Dark Helmet, is it?
Why do you always say dark? Why are you saying disdain at Dark Helmet? I will not have you.
I don't mean disdain. Did I forget the name of this character?
If I can't, it is Dark Helmet, by the way.
Dark Helmet, okay.
But yeah, if I can't say anything bad about Joan Rivers, you don't say anything about Dark Helmet.
Nothing about that character.
The best part of this movie.
So they're trying to find her because she is this thing that they need. They end up at Yoda's place, who is Mel Brooks. Mel Brooks was known for inserting himself in as a character.
And boy, did he in this movie, not just with yogurt, but with the president.
Yep. Oh, yeah. And then there's the president who's basically the emperor. And they're trying to get all the fresh air from the princess's home planet. Anyway. Our Han character learns about the Force and he gets this ring. They have to go and stop what's happening. They open up the Force field and they start stealing the air. There's a light ring battle. It's not a saber ring battle that happens.
No, it's a ring battle.
They stop everything. Everybody's saved. It looks like he's gone away. She still has to marry this prince. But guess what? He shows up and this medallion that he's had the whole time is really a birth certificate. He's a prince, so he can marry her and everyone's happy. And poor Joan Rivers robot has to turn off her virgin alarm.
Yeah, we'll get into that.
Which, so I know people are going to have a problem with that, but I got to tell
you.
No,
it's funny.
It is funny as hell.
It's so funny.
And it's also today... that joke still holds up because guess what? There are psychos who put that much factory into virginity. So it's actually like, it really holds up when you think about it. So yeah. You know, it ends. And I think there's a song. There's a theme song. Is there?
Yeah,
a
there
theme
is.
Song?
There okay. is a theme song.
There's a theme song.
But anyway, so they're trying to find Princess Vespa. They're watching the wedding internally. This is Dark Helmet and the Empire. She's looking at the radar. Why isn't it doing anything? Why isn't it doing anything? Well, that's because it's not a radar, sir. It's a Mr. Coffee. Would you like some? Yes. I always have coffee when I watch Radar. Everyone knows that. Of course we do, sir. And they all protect the walls.
He plays it so well. Like, he plays it so well. Oh, and he was with John Candy on SCTV, weren't they?
Yes, he was.
Yeah. Did they have a scene together in this movie? I don't think so.
Not really.
Yeah, I don't think they did. Anyway, that just a side point for anyone who knows about SCTV and anyone who's a Canadian.
But yeah, we get Joan Rivers as Dot Matrix, which, say what you want, I will defend the line, I know Prince Valium is a pill, but you could have married him for your father's sake and had a headache for the next 25 years. Do you know how many sham marriages? Very poignant and very on brand for Joan Rivers' robot. It's Joan Rivers' robot brand. Is literally Joan Rivers. Anytime.
I wonder if she ever altered her lines or something, or if they were kind of like, being a you joke, can you make it more of a you joke?
I would think it's sort of like, and I hate to do this because there's a lot of lines like this. I only have a few highlighted, but I'm thinking it was similar to like the way you would treat a Robin Williams or a James Woods,
mm-hmm.
or like those things when they're inside the booth, because you would get with parody, especially when you know what you have.
Yeah.
Where the script can just be a roadmap, and by the way, you can just throw in whatever lines you want, because she was never on set.
No.
She was, like, Joan Rivers' robot was played by a suit actress voiced by Joan Rivers.
Mm-hmm.
Because you do that, there are only very few things that need to be in place with her lines.
Yeah.
Like the Prince Valium is a pill line. Well, yeah, but she could have made that however she wanted, so long as in the context of her leaving and the robot disapproving.
Yeah. And it's, but yeah, there's so many Rivers-isms, I guess. I don't know how to put it. It's, I can't help but smile. What I should say is this is a parody. You're not going to be getting something super, super deep. We're not at like cutting edge cinematography and stuff. We're looking for fun.
And you're coming off of Rogue One with us. No, this is a completely different movie.
Yeah.
I am not going to whine about characterization in this movie. Bar Dark Helmet, because I absolutely love him.
So good.
Everything he does. Speaking of which, if we're talking about good parody, we have to talk about President's Group, because Mel Brooks, in of himself, is, I find, the greatest strength is Mel Brooks, and his greatest weakness is Mel Brooks.
Mm-hmm.
With Mel Brooks, he's very, very much what you see is what you get. You see a lot of that with the Dark Helmet stuff and the Colonel Sanders stuff. There's a lot of KFC jokes made because you decided to name it Colonel Sanders. And if it wasn't funny to you the first time, Mel Brooks is not inventive enough to make it funny to you the eighth or the ninth time you use the joke.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what really weighs this movie down for me. That being said, where it shines is when the joke can hit you like a freight train. Like, say, Perry Air, salt free air.
Yep. Sorry.
And the first lazy eye joke when they miss.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, I said across her nose, not up her nose. The first lazy eye joke didn't get me. What did was immediately after, and it shouldn't have got me, but it got me really good. Was who hired him to be a gunner.
Yeah.
And it turns out to be an even more lazy eyed extremely and their family. Also the line, who is he? Well, he's an asshole, sir. I know that. What's his name? Asshole, sir. God. How many assholes do we have on the ship anyway? The whole platoon stands.
And it works. Oh, who's the actor who's Dark Helmet?
Rick Moranis.
Rick Moranis knows what he's doing.
A physical actor.
Yeah, but also knows what's meant to happen in this kind of movie.
Yep.
And it's where there's it's almost a theatrical level of performance with the reactions and stuff, because
almost Moranis is one of the few people giving it his all to this movie.
Yeah, it's very theatrical. What's also nice is it's kind of like a nod to the audience. It just it adds to the humor, because he's without breaking the fourth wall, he's self-aware. Does that make sense?
Yep. It's very clear that Rick Moranis loved Darth Vader's portrayal.
Yes.
Because you could not screw up a portrayal in this many ways, in this many intricacies, even with a Mel Brooks script that is entirely based on it, without having a love of Vader.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think Mel Brooks cared about Star Wars. Not nearly to the level that Rick Moranis did. Because it is clear, every interaction that Dark Helmet has the script plus Moranis. I'm sorry. I will defend Dark Helmet till the day I die.
Speaking of Dark Helmet, we're going to kind of go out of order a little bit.
Yeah.
I want to do a shout out to one of the minions played by Winslow.
Yep.
Because that was such a cameo.
Yeah.
But oh my God, does he pack so much into that, like, minute it's, that we see him? Like they just let him do his thing.
Yep. And they did that too with the alien cameo too, like way later on. It's just like, here it is. It's funny. That's a lot of what Mel Brooks' humor is.
Mm.
But the problem is when it isn't funny. But again, if we're going to talk about Dark Helmet, which I think we should do this, Lone Star! They hijack the princess's thing. And he goes and he finds the princess isn't there.
Yeah.
He hits himself and falls into the ship.
It's so good.
Okay, when the Winnebago goes into hyperspace and they go into hyperspeed, so he's like, no, we don't need hyperspeed, we'll never catch up to them like that, we need ludicrous speed.
I love the whole thing.
He doesn't strap in.
He's
flying in zero gravity. They stop because they overshoot. He flies directly into the wall.
And they went flat. Is that what happened?
Yep. Thank God you're wearing a helmet. Yeah. So what's our next order, sir? How about everybody take five? Smoke them if they got them? Which is actually a good order.
Yep.
Because they overshot them. And it takes a while for the Winnebago to get out of hyperspeed. So it's ironically a very good order to do. Because there's shit, I don't know. As much as I'm not a huge fan of Princess Vespa and Lone Star, bang. On this ship, you will refer to me as idiot, not captain. And you will not call me you. I don't know. If you're going to do the Han Leia stuff like that, then this is probably the best way you could do it.
It's so dialed to 11 of ridiculousness that it's just...
Yeah.
It makes me laugh.
And the other thing, because you'll see Mel Brooks do a lot of this too with the prop comedy.
Yeah.
And the merchandising comedy. If prop comedy doesn't hit for you, like say the literal big hairdryer full of hot air that is in one of the princess's bags, or the comb through the galaxy with literal giant combs, neither of which hit for me, you are not going to enjoy the prop comedy of this movie, because it's all like that. They all hit you over the head. And it's all like, see that? It's funny, huh? It's funny.
Fortunately, because we've established that I'm the person who sticks their head out of the window and goes, when we do this, I freaking love the comb the desert thing. I'm so sorry. It's just like how I love when they jam the radar.
See that? It's lighter. Oh, that is the best. I can carry two or three of these. That hit me.
Oh yeah, they don't dump the luggage. They just dump the contents.
Yep. And when the Empire can't find Princess Vespa, they go and they get a copy of Spaceballs from Mr. Rental.
Yes.
And they pop it in. No. And then it's Dark Helmet flying into the hull of the ship, and then no, go past this part. In fact, never play it again. I don't know why, but it's like I have seen parodies do this and do it better throughout the time. Family Guy Blue Harvest was really, really good at jokes like the comb through the galaxy being a literal comb. Or Pinky in the Brain doing Star Wars. That's all I need to say to you. But that bit, like, there is some knowledge of it being the first one and it being like groundbreaking in its field, because you can see that, but it hasn't aged all that well. What has is your, like, the timing and wit of some of your actors and actresses, like Joan Rivers with the line, "That is my virgin alarm. It's programmed to go off before you do."
It's so good.
Yeah.
And what I love is it's one of those jokes that can work for kids, but they don't quite get it. And then it works for adults because they do get it.
Yep. Basically what, throughout all this movie, if you're looking at it, it's got a lot of low-hanging fruit, like the yogurt, the merchandising scene.
Oh, we haven't spoken about yogurt. I'm sorry, I called him Yoda, but the Yoda character who is yogurt.
Yeah, go ahead, speak about yogurt, because I don't have much to say about him other than he's there. He's Mel Brooks. Do you get it? It's funny. That's all I have for him.
It's basically I feel like yogurt is there as exposition, because let's be honest, this movie is doing
it in
90 minutes what three movies did.
Like, and it's not doing a good job of it either.
But it's there's a lot to fit in, is what I mean.
Oh,
but also it's this is full fourth wall removal, where going to talk about the merchandising that is Star Wars, which I feel on having the knowledge now that we do of what some of the actors' contracts were in relation to that in the original three movies.
Yep.
I feel, is it beating you over the head? Yes, but it's also more biting at the same time, if that makes sense.
I don't think it's very biting. I'm sorry. The merchandising, yes, like Star Wars is big into merchandising. Yes, that
which
is,
I do want to point out happened before Disney was involved.
Star Wars as a movie worked because of its merchandising. Lucas bet everything on his merchandising and sequel rights and stuff like that. Lucas didn't take a salary for Star Wars. He didn't make a dime off of Star Wars. Where he did was retaining all merchandising rights. And he wanted all of the profits to the sequels. Nobody thought Star Wars was going to work. It's one of the biggest studio blunders ever. Because up until Disney, who was making money off of Star Wars? Lucas. More so than anybody else.
Oh yeah, yeah.
It was wonderful, but just because that's true it doesn't mean that, you know, Spaceballs 2, The Quest for More Money is a good joke. It doesn't mean that a lot of the merchandising stuff is good jokes. The biggest side being Spaceballs the Flamethrower, it's for kids. That is a good joke.
Well, do we need to mention the lawn darts fiasco?
Oh, please go ahead. Mention lawn darts.
Oh, fiasco. I can't remember if it was the 70s version or the 80s version. But those long darts killed kids. No, didn't kill. Yeah. They maimed. Nearly killed, maimed. It felt like it was kind of a double joke.
Yep.
Like a joke on these unsafe toys, and then also that Star Wars will brand anything.
Yeah, which it will. And it did.
Yep. Yep.
But
yep.
Yeah. Similarly, like I'm just going to go completely off because I'm not a huge fan of the Mel Brooks hit you over the head with the same joke, don't even bother to tell it any differently style of humor. I'm not huge onto Mel Brooks. I think I would have liked to have seen him as an actor in this movie,
mm-hmm.
without all of the creative control. I would want to see Mel work under constraint, because I think under constraint, this movie would have been a lot better. I think Mel would have hated himself, but I think the movie would have been a lot better. Because here's the thing. I don't care about what's going on in the story, because the story doesn't care. You are not here for the story or the characters or anything like that. You are here for jokes. And I think where the movie is really strong is in the people who understand fully at any given time that this is a joke.
Yeah.
And who have a lot of love for either Star Wars or themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the reasons where I remember Rick Moranis's Dark Helmet, I always have, is because as a concept, it's fantastic. It never gets old. And Rick Moranis is talented enough in his delivery, timing, and physicality that he can get away with a lot of jokes that wouldn't work if it wasn't Rick Moranis doing it. Not all of Dark Helmet's stuff hits bullseyes, but the context timing of jokes can change because of how Rick Moranis can portray himself physically. That is the talent of Rick Moranis. Mel Brooks' setup and punches are all the same. If you look at the president, if you look at Yogurt in the way that their jokes are told, it's all the same way.
Mm-hmm.
It's the Mel Brooks way. And he isn't talented enough to go outside of his own way. Rick Moranis is. Joan Rivers' robot is quite literally Joan Rivers' robot. That's the joke. You're going to enjoy it based purely on how much Joan Rivers resonates with you. And for me, Joan Rivers' robot is something that got better over time as I watched this movie years apart. Because some of the stuff that didn't hit 10 to 15 years ago can hit bullseyes now. Similarly, some of the stuff for Rick Moranis playing with his toys can hit on different levels now. Because I'm sorry, Rick Moranis just had so much fun playing with the Vespa action figure and the Dark Helmet one. And then making the Vespa one fall in love with the Dark Helmet one. Also the line, "I bet she gives great helmet." to the nursing that they had when Princess Vespa went in for the nose job.
You back your original nose.
No. Also the sign, "Conserve air, breathe less." And the sign, "No unauthorized or authorized personnel permitted." Those two sight gags were really, really good. That's the same as, "You idiots, these are not them. You captured their stunt doubles."
I loved that one.
Like,
sorry,
that is what happens when a Mel Brooks joke works. Like, that's very much a Mel Brooks joke, but it works.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have the trope of Princess Vespa having an incredible shot. The one-liner that I mentioned earlier, if I could walk, the movie would be over. The gigantic maid with a vacuum cleaner transformer.
Oh my
God. I'm impressed with the transformation, but they could have went for a better joke. That is a Mel Brooks joke that didn't hit for me. And there's a lot of those types of jokes that didn't hit for me. That's just the one I wrote down. And I don't know, I've jumped like every which way because I don't think it's very clear. If it's not very clear to the audience, I'm not a huge fan of the Mel Brooks comedy. And I don't believe Mel Brooks is talented enough to get out of the Mel Brooks way of his own comedy.
Dun, dun, dun.
I'm sorry. I don't think Mel Brooks should have directed this movie.
Wow. I did want to kind of do a shout out to some of the actors in here, if you're okay.
Yeah.
And then I wanted to talk about references. Because we've been kind of all over the place with this.
You can jump in to do whatever you want. I don't care.
So we of course have Mel Brooks, obviously. I mentioned John Candy as Barf, Rick Moranis as Dark Helmet, Bill Pullman as Lone Star. Can I just say, because when you look at what Bill Pullman is mostly known for, it is nice to see him having fun on the screen.
Yes.
It is quite nice to see him having fun. Daphne Zinnega is Princess Vespa. She is like television across the board for her credits. She's still actively working today. So, you know, an established person, but over on the TV side. Dick Van Patten is King Roland.
Yes, and he does a great job too.
Colonel Sanders is George Weiner. I mentioned him before. Michael Winslow is the radar technician. Now, Dot Matrix. So the voice performer, obviously, is Joan Rivers. The physical performer is Lauren Yarnell Jansen. She's mostly known for physical performances. There's nothing that I can really mention on that. Yeah. And then, of course, we have John Hurt coming in as John Hurt, which we'll get to. Ronnie Graham as the minister. And there were a couple of names that popped up for me. So I don't know if you're going to recognize this name, but Tim Russ was one of the troopers.
I do not recognize that name, but I feel like I should.
He's from Star Trek Voyager fame.
Should recognize him.
And then there's... So obviously with little people performers...
Yeah.
You tend to use the same ones. Like once they're in, they're in.
Yeah.
One of them I didn't realize was Tony Cox.
And really?
His big thing was Bad Santa, if I remember correctly.
Yep.
So I thought that was just a pretty cool factoid. We also have there's some older people who I don't know if anybody's going to notice, but I thought you'd like this. So Pizza the Hut. The voice was Dom DeLuise.
Yay.
And I thought you'd like that. And one more thing that I thought you'd enjoy. So Tress McNeil was an uncredited voice in there.
Yes, she was the voice of the alarm, if I'm not mistaken.
She was the voice of Dink.
Okay.
And then there's another uncredited Dink voice by Phil Hartman. And I thought you'd get a kick out of that one.
Yeah.
And I think, now this is my final one that I'm going to mention from the cast, just because it's all it's all over the place, but you can tell that there's quite there's some who's who and there's some not so who's, and there's people who they were already on their, they were at the very beginning of their kind of trajectory.
Yeah.
Now, there was an archived sound that was uncredited called Screaming Guard.
Yep, that's
by
the
Wilhelm Sheb scream. Woolley.
Yeah.
And I thought you'd get a kick out of that as well.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, great, it's Wilhelm Scream, yay.
Yeah, but I feel everybody knows the Wilhelm Scream. They don't necessarily know it's Sheb. But yeah, I could go on about the cast, but it is one of those unique moments where you're seeing people who were at the very height of their careers, people who were at the beginning of their careers, people who were, as we later, as history later showed us, were at the end of their careers. It's really, really nice when you get that kind of combo, and it is something that I think is special to parody. Yep. When you look at it, it's a special combo. Now, I want to go back to John Hurt. Would you like to explain the fun of John Hurt in this movie?
You go ahead and explain the fun of John Hurt in this movie.
Well, first I would like you to explain, so Lone Star can go back and go to the wedding.
Lone Star!
Yeah, because his medallion turns out to be birth certificate saying he's a prince. But B, Pizza the Hut doesn't follow him anymore.
No.
And it's in the news. Tells us why.
Man, I completely forget why, but I do know.
He got locked in a car and had to eat himself.
Baked. Yeah.
And had to eat himself. And it's just so out of left field. But again, I love it too. Yeah, so before Lone Star decides he's going to go back, Barf wants him to go back, by the way.
Yeah.
And he's like, I can't, blah, 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 for reasons.
I can't. I'm not a prince.
Yeah. They stop at a space diner. And honestly, I think more sci-fi movies should have space diners, but that's neither here nor there.
1000% with you. 1000% with you. We can go on that diatribe all you want.
Yeah, we need more space diners. That's all I'm going to say. It's just like how I wants me my space Vikings with Thor from MCU. Not that MCU listens to this, but I just want you to know, I wants me my space Vikings. And I almost got them too with Ragnarok. I want them in full. Anyway. So they're at the diner and they order, and then John Hurt's there.
They ordered John Hurt ordered the special. That's all I could say.
Yeah. And then suddenly he's like, and falls down, and this alien baby punches through his chest, and he goes, oh no, not again.
Not again.
And then we get something that is so near and dear to my heart. I don't know. This gag always got me on Looney Tunes, and it gets
me now. The Michigan frog.
Hello, my baby. Hello, my honey. Hello, my ragtime girl. I also really love the fact that they used a puppet for that as well.
Yeah.
I also love the fact that, like, you know, the puppet is the aliens going across the counter, and how people are like, yeah, and move their food.
Yeah.
And then it's like, what did he have? He had the special. Oh, I ordered the special. Don't eat the special then.
On the soup. Good choice.
Yeah. And it's just, I don't know. We need more space diners, sci-fi. Get on it, sci-fi creators. Space diners.
It's true. Speaking of which, for whatever reason, the one thing I will give Mel Brooks credit for is the Schwarzsaber fight with our helmet slicing off a camera crew's arm. Because I'm like, okay, hang on. Even Spaceballs treats the lightsabers better than Disney. That's my note, because I love that gag. It's one of the few gags I loved, because it kept it. Like, it kept the ferocity of the lightsaber as Lone Star ducks and helmet slashes into a camera crew's arm, and he falls backward, and then it's like, oh, I'm sorry, he did that.
That was so good. I did also like the I'm your father's cousin's best friend's roommate. So what does that make me? Absolutely nothing. I think it's the delivery of it.
Yep.
Like, because he's going for the gravitas.
Yeah.
And there's no gravitas.
And it works because there's no gravitas there. The thing is, Rick Moranis is talented enough to do that.
Oh, yeah.
And I wish, because here's the thing, Rick Moranis, talented as hell. John Candy, talented as hell. Joan Rivers, talented as hell. I wish we had more of that kind of talent in the vocal delivery of a lot of this stuff. It would have hit a lot better. No disrespect to anybody in this movie, bar one, that's Mel, because I'm sorry. Don't just hit with one kind of joke, hit with a variety of different kinds of jokes. With a variety of different kinds of, don't just bombard me with one joke or one kind of joke. Because I'm either going to love it and it's going to get stale, or I'm going to hate it and groan when it comes back.
Mm-hmm.
Like Mr. Coffee was funny as hell. Diminishing returns with Mr. Radar, Mr. Video Rental, what have you. You ran that joke into the ground. And there wasn't enough space in between the jokes to freshen them up.
Mm.
That, like, and the same as the, okay, Perrier, funny as hell. But then you repeat the same type of prop joke over and over and over again. Sometimes it works, depending on the prop. The Spaceballs flamethrower for kids.
Mm-hmm.
That worked for me because it's a different kind of merchandise and it's a different kind of spin on the joke. The comb through the galaxy with a giant comb doesn't work for me because it's literally beating you over the head with this giant comb as it's combing through the galaxy.
It's not the giant comb, it's the tiny one.
What works is Rick Moranis.
Yes.
Because he can choose to deliver that joke in different ways. That makes it work. And that can vary it up. In the point where Mel Brooks or somebody should have went over the script with Mel, sat him down, slapped him across the face, and said, "You're doing this way too much. Restraint, Mel. Otherwise, it's going to fall flat." And I don't think anybody had the balls to do that. And that is, like, that is my big issue with Spaceballs in of itself.
Mm.
When it works, it works. But when it doesn't, it is some of the most groaning, painful stuff you will see.
But on the bright side, it is a short movie.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's 80-something minutes. It's not that long.
Oh, so I actually overshot it with the time. Now, that being said, overall, I still think it's a fun movie to watch. Like, it's entertainment, yeah. It's fluff. If you want something that's just going to make you laugh, you know?
It can. But don't be surprised if it doesn't.
Yeah.
Spaceballs is very, very much what you see is what you get.
Yeah. And also, I will say, I do have to be in the right frame of mind to watch older humor. And I don't mean older humor in terms of subject matter, like, oh, that's taboo now. No, no, no. I mean older humor in terms of setup and delivery.
Yeah.
That's what I mean.
1,000%.
Yeah. It's, but if I'm there, I'm there. And then it's always something like I said, I have such a soft spot for the Joan Rivers style of humor.
Yeah.
That, like, it, like I said, it's
one of— And the Joan Rivers stuff works.
Yeah.
So because it's Joan Rivers. You couldn't have anybody else in that role and have the same dialogue and have it work.
Yeah, it's got a lot to do with right person for the right job. I remember watching the documentary on Joan Rivers, which was, I can't remember if it was 5 or 10 years before she died. She was heavily involved in it, where she's talking about, you know, she is this legend, this icon who, you know, has all of this money and all of this stuff and all of his success. And yet still, when she goes to be part of a benefit or something, there's all these other comedians with teams of writers and it's just her. And it is something to be said for, sometimes I wonder how her career would have been if, because she described herself as an actress who does comedy. And I sometimes wonder how her career would have been if she had had that freedom to do that part. But also, I don't know the intricacies and details. I do know I felt the weight in the documentary when she was talking about, because one of her close friends died during the filming. And she said, it's not just that I've lost this person, I've lost that memory bank. I have no one I can say to, do you remember when? That time we went to, she's like, I've lost that. There's no one I can communicate that to anymore. And so much gravitas there. Now, that being said, this is a movie with hitting actors. And
yes.
Like, especially in terms of Dark Helmet.
Yes.
Like, that was, I think was he at his peak or was he on his upswing?
That was as close to peak Moranis as you're going to get.
Yeah. And like John Candy's there, Michael Winslow's there, and you've got these heavy hitting comedians from Days of Yesteryear. Like, it's quite the thing. But yeah, I will agree with you. You do need to be in kind of a right frame of mind to watch it.
Yep.
You can't necessarily be, because what is it? As humans, we improve. We try to improve upon everything. So you have to remember that this isn't, you know, the 20 years, the 40 years after version. This is the beginnings version. This was at the cutting edge of changing the format again.
Yes.
Because again, it's building on what was before it. So that's what we're seeing.
Yep.
I will say it is fun to watch it with kids, though.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it changes the dynamic a bit.
I can bet it does.
Yeah.
In a similar way to Star Wars, too, though.
Yeah, like when you watch it through a kid's eyes. There was a documentary about Star Wars, and I had problems with this documentary and who made it. But I will say there was a very powerful sequence where they ask all the adults, what did you think of episodes 1, 2, and 3? And then they ask the kids, and the kids are just so excited, so enchanted, so like over the moon, like they've never seen something like it before. And there is something to be said to be looking at something through the lens of someone who doesn't have the past experience.
Yeah.
But on that note, because we don't like to end heavy, do you have any final thoughts on Spaceballs?
There is just one. Can we please normalize Rick Moranis playing with his action figures?
Oh my god, we need to.
Oh my god. That's how to use a joke in a right way, and then just turn Dark Helmet into even more of a man child than he is. It's so good. The same as, I am not a huge fan of this movie. If I were going to rank it, it would probably be above Phantom Menace. And if anyone who knows me knows, Phantom Menace is really low on my list. There's only one that's lower than it, if I remember correctly.
What could that one possibly be?
I don't know. Maybe the biggest betrayal to what a Star Wars movie could have and should have been. I don't know what that is. I've tried to wipe it from my memory, but thing is, you can have a good time with Spaceballs.
Mm-hmm.
Just be fully aware of what you're getting into and be fully aware that it is a flawed movie. It is a very flawed movie, but for what it is, it's okay.
I do want to say, from what I remember on rewatch, when we say flawed, again, we're not referring to like humor that now is viewed as problematic. No. We're not referring to that. We're referring to delivery style and overuse of a joke.
Yes.
So just wanted to put that out there, that you know, to be specific. Now, on that note, I'm trying to think. I believe this episode brings us into the December holiday season is right around the corner.
And you know
what y'all have to look forward to?
Oh, what do they have to look forward to?
Our Treehouse of Horror Halloween review.
Oh my God, that thing!
Because, you know, when it came out and then when we got time to record it, it's going to be December. So
it's still not even out yet when we're recording this.
I know.
Isn't it funny? We're recording this in November.
I know, and it's still not out. So, you know.
Right? It's so much fun.
Happy holidays. I will say, I don't think it's going to be this year, but I think next year we're going to review the Star Wars Christmas special.
I don't want to do it.
Yes, you want to do it.
No, I don't.
Yes, you do.
No, I don't. That is the single worst piece of Star Wars media I've ever seen.
You want to do it.
No, I don't.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
Don't make me do it. It's terrible.
Okay, fine. I won't make you rewatch it. What I will make you do is explain to me why it's bad.
No! That means I have to rewatch it.
You don't have to rewatch it.
It's like Star Wars meets Sesame Street without Sesame Street.
So bad. Star Wars meets Sesame Street, yes, but without Sesame Street, oh.
Yeah. Trust me, Star Wars has met Sesame Street, and it's worked.
Yes.
The Simpsons has met Sesame Street, and it works. And if you haven't seen it, I will show you the clip. Robin Williams meets Sesame Street and it works.
Mm-hmm.
But if you try to do something meet Sesame Street without Sesame Street, it doesn't end well.
Well, you think it over, but you know, Christmas 2024, because I gotta give props with the whole year to work up to it.
Oh god. You know what? I think we should do the Family Guy Star Wars parodies.
Fine, we can do those after my Christmas present of reviewing.
But my Christmas present to you is going to be the two really, really good Family Guy Star Wars parodies, and it's a trap, which they didn't want to do, but they had to, because Fox wouldn't let Seth MacFarlane make Ted without it, and... Anyway.
On that note, thank you so much to all of our fans, especially Jerry in Kazakhstan!
Jerry!
Woot! Keep your eyes out in 2024. Big changes happening. We are kind of update episode that we have posted already. Once again, you will be seeing Treehouse Horror probably in December. And we will continue trade negotiations on what we're reviewing next. Yes. To see how that goes on. In addition, a little update on Shore. Very busy, life shit's happening, so you're probably going to be seeing Crabsworth join me on the Clam Jammers thing once a month for a little while, which will be interesting.
Not sure, but
Crabsworth playing Not Sure.
There we go.
We'll see what happens. And on that note, do you have anything to say to the peoples?
Thank you so much for letting us do this again and again. Regardless of how you feel about Spaceballs or not, it was still a great time to be able to get in there and vent my frustration about the Mel Brooks style, because I'm not a huge fan of it.
But you are a huge fan of Dark Helmet.
Oh, yeah. Can we have more Dark Helmet and less Mel Brooks? In Spaceballs 2, The Quest for More Money?
That'd be great. All right. Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Clam Jammers podcast. Check us out at clamjammers.ca for all your coven needs. Hello and welcome. Shut up, Grandpa!